Welcome to Iroh's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Some of you may have seen the film, If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium. The 1969 movie featured American tourists taking an 18-day guided bus tour of nine European countries. Well, there's a better way to travel through Europe, and my guest has written about it. Travel author, photographer Lucas Peters has written Grand European Journeys, 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. It's published by Moon. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Lucas Peters, who also owns Journey Beyond Travel, it's a boutique travel agency, go to lucasmpeters.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. And Lucas, welcome to the show.
All right. Thanks so much for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. So this, I think you're the farthest guest I've had on the show. You're in Morocco.
Yeah, I'm in Tangier, Morocco right now. I'm in the home office, as it were.
Can you dress the way you're dressed in Morocco and get away with it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, Morocco is a very liberal sort of country. Like, Moroccans dress in jeans and t-shirts as much as they do jalabas and kandoras, you know? So it just sort of depends on where you're at in the country, how people want to feel. You know, you see a lot of Western, especially in the cities, like a lot of Western wear.
Right. Well, you started in, I guess, in traveling in 2001. It was a study abroad experience in London. Yep. And from there, all of a sudden now, you're all these different places. Why did you decide to write this guidebook?
Well, it was, to be totally honest, it wasn't me that decided to write the guidebook. It was actually Moon wanted to do this guidebook, and they thought I'd be a really good fit for it. And so they approached me with the idea, and my first knee-jerk reaction, if anybody out there knows what I've written before, I've written mostly about Morocco. That's the even though I've traveled a lot in Europe, I've written a little bit about some time in Iceland, Paris, you know, that sort of thing. But I've done their Moon guidebooks. I've done their Morocco stuff specifically for about 10 years now, maybe a little bit, maybe more like 12 years now. And, you know, my first question was, hey, this book sounds amazing. Why do you want me to write it? I'm your Morocco guy. I'm in Africa. But to be fair, like outside of my terrace right here, I do look at Spain. Like, Spain's not that, it feels like you can kind of swim there some days, you know, right? Like, it's really like the Strait of Gibraltar where we're at, it's pretty narrow. But yeah, I talked to the editor and everything. Like, I talked to Grace Pujimono, that she's fantastic. And so Grace and I were just talking through it, and she's like, listen, you've just done a lot of these sort of travel experiences that we want to relate to people, because you've done a lot of the hiking, a lot of the rail trips, you've rented cars and done crazy road trips. And I think she follows me on like Instagram or something when I used to post a lot about this stuff. And so, yeah, it was just a conversation of like, how do you make it happen then? And
so what you're telling us, if I understand correctly, is you didn't decide to write the book. You decided to accept the check to write the book.
A little bit. Yeah. No, right. No, it wasn't even like, to be fair, like the check's not that much. Like, I love Moon. Like, they're great to work with, but like, it's not like, you know, you get paid a lot to do this sort of thing. But I love the challenge of it. I love the idea of like the modularity of some different sorts of itineraries. And to be fair too, just being where I'm at, I have so many friends and family that ask me like, hey, we're going into Paris. What should we do? Oh, we're going to be in Italy for a few days. What should we do? And this gets me out of a lot of work later on in life, because I could just be like, here's the book.
Here's the book. Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah. And since you're family, I won't charge you for the book. But if it's anybody else here, give me the money. And here's
I still charge them. Don't worry. I still charge them. They can spend the $20 on the book.
It's well worth it, because it's not only different itineraries. You have all maps and photos, and it's quite descriptive. And you seem to have fun with it. I think would that be a key aspect of this? You're not dreary. You don't have that kind of personality, and so you're not going to write that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, at the end of the day, travel should be fun, right? I always tell people I work with, whether it's with my company or, you know, people I'm, you know, like, you know, just in the industry with, trying to, you know, write a great guidebook or something. I was like, listen, if it's not fun, we're doing something wrong. Like, travel should be, it should be educational. It should be immersive. You should be able to like check out and explore somewhere else and feel like you're getting another piece of the world. And if that's not somehow a little bit fun, like, stay at home.
Yeah. Stay at home and just save money and do all that. But I guess what people think about in terms of travel, I interviewed someone just recently who talked about, and it was fascinating. They planned their trips 6 months ahead of time. In other words, they went with purpose. They knew who they wanted to meet and what they wanted to do. And so they spent 6 months, and then they went and did it. And as a result, wrote a book. what I like about your book too is that it's, in essence, a guide to, for want of a better term, eating and drinking your way through Europe, no matter what your taste. So you're designing your, as your boutique company is, you're designing itineraries for different types of people. What's the most unusual group of people you've had to deal with?
I'll give James Wisnowski a shout out here. He's a watercolorist out of Los Angeles, currently living in New Hampshire, I think. But he wanted to bring a group of his friends, and they wanted to do watercolor painting all around Morocco. and so we talked a lot about the time of day, what particular street corner, how the shadows are going to be crossing it, on March, 19th or whatever it was, So I mean, we got highly specific with that. But that's the kind of stuff I love to do. Yeah,
that's definitely a curated tour.
yeah. I mean, I love doing this stuff. I love the challenge of just like someone has a very particular interest that they want to pursue somewhere. And most of us, I think, when we travel, and I include myself with there, it's a little grab bag. I want a little of this, a little of that. But I also know like there's a few things that I love. And if I see that thing I love somewhere in another culture, it's another way for me to engage with that culture. So I went, I still can repair typewriters, but I used to repair typewriters. It was one of the things I enjoyed doing.
Wait. Electric or manual?
Manual. Excellent. Yeah, I don't know my way around a Selectric very well. I know Select, but yeah, you get into the electronics of it, I'm beyond that. But I'll tell you, my favorite typing experience for a portable is an Olympia SM9 for sure. Like, that is just a fantastic machine. But, I go around, and if I saw one of the secondhand street market selling thing, like I'd take a look for typewriters, you travel and I make room in my luggage for a typewriter. Also, I've taken some ridiculous typewriters home, which are not light, those are not lightweight. So that would be like my souvenir shopping. I'd try to get an Italian keyboard from Florence or whatever, So.
Where do you put all this stuff? Because you do travel a lot and you work with clients and you wrote the book. Yeah. So where do you put all the stuff you collect as you travel? You'd have to have a warehouse or a storage unit or something.
Well, my wife made me sell most of it. But we do have a family home in the south of Spain. So I have a little suite there with all sorts of odds and ends from around the world, another whole library over there of stuff.
Do you find that the world of, and we talked about this before we started, that the world of technology has changed so much that does it make it easier for you to do your job, not just writing the guidebook, but also just in terms of your business, curating experiences for people that want to do certain things in certain countries?
I think like a lot of things, it's a good question, but like a lot of things, it's a bit of both.
All my questions are good. What do you mean? It's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay. Come on.
Yeah. Well, it's just me pausing for time. I'm just like,
I know I called you on it, of course. Yeah.
But no, honestly, I think on one hand, it's almost too easy as a traveler, but I think it more of as a traveler, it's almost too easy now. Cause I think some of this stuff I miss relying on a paper map, like that, and getting lost trying to, do the scout thing and asking the guy on the street corner in my really bad Bulgarian, like how to get, plaza and, so I miss that. Cause I think it takes away some spontaneity because now we're sort of programmed. We're like, okay, cool. We're going to, find the top 10 TripAdvisor reviewed restaurants and go with one of those. It takes a little bit of the discovery out, I think, a little bit, which in turn, like as someone curating a trip, it actually makes it a bit more difficult in a way because I have to weed through a lot more garbage. There's a lot of garbage on the internet. So it's just like kind of wading through stuff if I haven't been there yet to kind of see. And to, I guess, as a business, what I do, we curate stuff that we already know. So I'm not sending people places I haven't been, restaurants I haven't checked out, hotels I haven't slept in. Like, that's a different thing, I think. But before I do that, that pre-trip for me, like pre-trip research, it's a lot of wading through stuff, because there's just a lot of junk between booking.com and TripAdvisor. And I don't know, there's 1,000 of these, Expedia or whatever, there's 1,000 of these websites now,
How does it work these days? Because with the, obviously, the development of online resources, there was the the thought that travel agents are not necessary as much as they used to be. Right. But clearly you have a thriving business. Is it because of the curation aspect of it? You're creating a unique experience for clients. Is that why it works in your case, as opposed to somebody just going online and trying to wade through all that stuff and trying to create an experience that they can't work out themselves?
I hope so. I really hope so. I think there is still a group of travelers that prefer someone who's been there and someone they trust. And I think, you know, we're such a little small business that, you know, I meet all of our clients at like Zoom, like this, you know, sort of thing. And so we build a rapport, a trust. And I think that carries over, you know. I'm of course doing all the books, and I'm trying to give people the really good information as well. And it's information I think people understand that I've been there, I've tried it out. So either you kind of like what I have to say and you enjoy my take on things, or you want to find someone else or do it yourself, you know. And I think it is, I think travel is democratized. You know, you can do it by yourself. You can do it, you know, fairly cheap, you know, fairly inexpensively. You can travel Europe. You can travel the US, you know, it's just a different style of travel, I think.
Right. It's no longer
it's definitely possible.
Yeah. It's no longer Europe on $5 a day, but it's still reasonable.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Yeah, not $5, but maybe 10.
Yeah. Now, the book again is called Grand European Journeys, 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. The more, I assume, is underwater. And well, that would be sea then. So I guess there's not that many other. Hot air balloon, I guess, would be.
Outer space.
Yeah. Yeah. Space. I was thinking about that too. Well, Road, Rail, Sea, and More. So yeah, you could do a hot air balloon, which would be none of the above. It'd be more. So yeah, that could work. What was your
big air? It'd be air.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't list the air in the subtitle of the book. That's why I brought that up.
Yeah.
Just to give you a
hard time. Yeah. The and more, that's we were trying to figure out how to do these sort of adventure travel stuff. Like if you wanted to go hiking, biking, you know, and do like the Camino de Santiago, or do, you know, the awesome, you know, Copenhagen to Berlin on a bike, you know, like how do you put that? Because we weren't going to do 10 biking itineraries. We weren't going to do 10 hikes, but we did want to include some classic ones in there and just show people how it's possible. So that was kind of the and more cluster right there.
Do you see that the reaction you're getting, you maybe want to do another version of this book, maybe call it 40 Not So Grand European Journeys for the more modest traveler or something like that? Is there enough material for another book after this one?
Oh yeah. If it was, if I had my druthers, this would be about a 1500 page book.
Right.
So, like, it's just unwieldy, but we had to cut some like fantastic itineraries, whether because it was a country that was overrepresented, we just felt we already had a lot for that country, or one that unfortunately, when we're doing the research, that's when the war in Ukraine broke out. So we had like two great ones in Ukraine that we couldn't publish, you know, because of, you know, what's happening there now. The ongoing war there, it's just, you know, you can't promote that sort of travel right now, unfortunately. Hopefully we will in the near future, but not now. And kind of along with that, we didn't end up doing as much as we wanted in the eastern part of Europe. Like we had some other stuff for like Poland, Estonia. I had a really fantastic road trip in Bulgaria that I'm really bummed didn't make it, you know. So yeah, there's a lot more out there.
You write about like outdoor. We talked about a little outdoor adventures example from Dublin, which I assume is just sitting outside drinking Guinness, right? Is that what that is? Outdoor adventure?
Yeah, basically, all you do is listen to the traditional music in the pubs and drink Guinness. You know, So I tell people, you know, to be really, really clear, like as much as I've done a ton of these, I haven't done all of these. You know, so I'm the lead writer on this, but there's a handful of other writers who actually specialize in a place like Ireland, which happens to be one of the places I haven't touched yet. It's one of the few European countries I actually haven't been to. So I was on another interview a while ago, and you know, we were like, "Hey, what's the one place that you're like, I should have got there that I never could get there?" And Dublin's my one place. You know, like it's like one of the bigger cities in Europe I've never been able to visit. You know,
well, there's still time. You're relatively young, so I think that will work out. When you put the book together, was it your guidance in terms of the format of the book, or was it coming from the book publishers, or a combination of the two?
It was pretty collaborative, you know, like all the way around. They came with the idea like, hey, we want to do a Europe book. We want to do itineraries. The number was unknown. How they were going to be organized was unknown. We understood early, like early on, like, yes, we'll definitely have a rail chapter that's just classic, you know. Right. But the question is, what are the rail trips then? Because you could do a lot of them. So that, you know, we probably could have done just a book of rail trips, and that exists. But we were trying to come up with something that hadn't been on the market yet. And the idea is, a lot of us, when we travel Europe, we'll land in a major city. We'll want to spend a few days in the city, maybe go to another major city, but then we'll still have like a week. So it's kind of like, okay, so you do Paris, you do London, but you still have this week. So from Paris, where else can you go? And that's, for me, the kind of cool thing with this book is it's modularized. There you go.
So. I'm glad you had to stumble over that instead of me. That's great.
So, but the idea is, you know, that you can take them and kind of mix and match a little bit. So what we're doing at every itinerary is we're telling you what pairs well with, you know. So if you have a bit more time, hey, check out these itineraries. You can leap right off from Paris pretty easily, or you from Madrid or Barcelona or, you know, right. Vienna or wherever you happen to be. Yeah.
You mentioned the classic rail trips and French Riviera, the Alps, etc. What is it about the rails that are more romantic, it seems, in Europe than they are in the United States?
Have you ever ridden the rail in the United States?
I have. I still enjoy it. But is it a mentality? Is it a design? Is it a combination of various factors that make the European rail experience just more romantic?
I think part of it is they actually have more modern trains that are a bit cleaner and faster, so you can hit cities pretty easily. I think about the last train trip I did in the U.S. Actually, I flew into New York and I went straight from the airport with my 5-year-old son, and we took the train to Boston because I had not done a train in the U.S. for a long time, and I thought, hey, the train connects; it'll be fine.
Oh yeah,
and. Just the connection and the slowness of the train. I mean, it was like a 5-hour train ride. And when I looked at it, I did like the reverse American thing. I'm looking at it on the map. I'm thinking, oh yeah, this should be like a 2-hour train ride. I didn't even look at the time, you know. And we're into this train ride. I'm like, oh, let me check the ticket. We're actually there. But I think part of the thing in Europe is it is fairly quick to get between cities. You know, I think that's part of, I mean, it's amazing to go from London to Paris in a couple hours, you know, and you're going under the water. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is still amazing to me that they did that. But isn't it also
the engineering is fantastic.
Yeah, but isn't it also you pick up more of the flavor of the land as you travel by train in Europe as opposed to the United States? Although I would say there are some adventures that you can take a train in the United States and the West and really enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of it's the landscapes. You know, there's some like through the Alps, like you mentioned, or the, you know, Bergen line and stuff that are just wonderful, just amazing. You know, you're just looking at just these mountains dropping off into the sea, and it's just, you know, mouth dropping, just like, wow, you know, that sort of thing. But I wouldn't underestimate the sleeper car though, because I think, you know, we're talking kind of budget travelers,
right?
You know, like,
right.
Can you still do it on $5 a day? Well, one of the things people, you know, still do to save money on hotels and stuff is they take the sleeper trains, you know, and that way you get a night. So you're not in it for the, you know, the landscapes, but the people you meet, you know, you're going to meet travelers that are traveling by your, you know, like you, you know, as you might travel. Whether you're with a couple, you're going solo, you're with some friends, you're on that gap year, you know, you're going to meet kind of like-minded people traveling at the same kind of level as you, you know? So I think there's that. There's a sort of like a social aspect to it as well as like a money-saving thing too.
Yeah, I can see that. It's also more efficient because you've gotten your sleep on the train, then you get off the train and you're ready to start the day and not have to worry about checking out of the hotel. You're just off the train.
Yeah, and then bam, you got your backpack on and you're hitting Budapest or whatever, you know?
Yeah. When you were putting this all together for the book, and again, it's called Grand European Journeys, 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. And we're going to meet Mr. Moore in just a few minutes. But the, that was a bad joke, but I had to do it. sorry about that.
Where's Michael? Is Michael Moore coming on this?
Yeah, he is, yeah. If we can get him into the screen, we'll see. But the, or Roger Moore would be better, actually, since it was.
Roger Moore would be great, too, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. when you're putting all this material together, how do you, this is a tough one, because you've traveled so much and you see so many things and you write about them and you put them in the book, how do you know that, let's say you wrote about a cafe, how do you know that cafe is going to be there a year from now or 2 years from now, or you go to some other kind of event that normally happens every month or every year, and then all of a sudden it doesn't anymore? How do you guard against that, or is there a way to work that out?
Well, I should introduce you to my magic ball. I have this ball that I can rub and look into the future, and then I say, "Ah, that's still."
You know, no, don't I wish, you know, I on my show. How dare you?
There, right? No. You know, like, I mean, so this, you can't know the future, you know, like, we have a saying here in Moran, tomorrow's never given, right? Right. I mean, you can't, who saw the pandemic coming, you know, like, who saw,
so,
you know, like,
there's. So you really don't have a crystal ball. Okay, I get it now. All right.
There's no crystal ball.
Right.
But what you can do, you know, there's some classic places that I still love that have been around for 100 years, 200
years. Like the Eiffel Tower's been around. That's not going to be moved or, yeah.
Who knows? But, you know, I mean, normally you should still be there, right? So there's some places that you're like, hey, this cafe, this has been working for a while. Usually I typically won't include a place until I've seen it around for a little bit. Like, I've seen too many places open and they don't make it, you know, past 6 months or a year, and then they have to close, right? So I've seen a lot of that. And unfortunately, one of my favorite coffee joints in Granada, like, it had been there until the pandemic. And so I think also is, and it didn't make it out of the pandemic, unfortunately. So, you know, there's a continuous sort of updating of my own sort of just notes and knowledge and stuff. But once I see like a cafe has been around for a while, that's a good one because they're kind of coming and going quite a bit. You know, I feel pretty confident it's still going to be there. Festivals are kind of the same thing, you know, like sometimes they change the calendars, but once it's on, it's like third iteration, fourth iteration. You kind of see it's a thing, you know, they should normally continue that. But that's part of like when you do an update, that's part of the updating process too, is like, hey, are these restaurants still there? The cafe still, does the hotel, you know, is it still good or has it, you know, changed ownership and gone downhill, you know? This stuff happens, you know, so it does, yeah.
How do you find time to balance the business with the writing, the research, and your own love of travel? How do you work that out time-wise? And you have a family, so how does that all work?
Well, first of all, my wife's awesome. So like, it doesn't work without her, right? So yeah. She's great. And my kids are fantastic. We started traveling with them when they're early on. So, yeah, so my kid, you know, he's 8 years old. And we've been traveling with him since he was 3 months old. And at this point, I am happy doing solo trips with him. He'll help me out, as a matter of fact, you know, like, and it's great having him on. I still have to watch out. I still have to kind of pace myself. But like when he needs that playground time, that's okay. I can sit back and do my notes. You know, that's when I'm working on my notes. So it's sort of like, how do you mix the family and the travel and the writing and the business and stuff? And luckily with the business, you know, if I have my laptop, I can kind of work from anywhere. And that's usually okay. You know, and I, to be fair too, our businessmen, we're a small business, but we have a great team. So like tomorrow morning, I'm flying to Rome. So me, like, as an example, I'm taking the family to Italy for a week and we're trying out some, a few places I want to try out. We're doing like a bike ride through Tuscany. We're going to do a pasta making class. My kids have never been to Venice, so I think they're going to be really happy to get on the gondolas and kind of do the water taxis and stuff. So we have some really super fun stuff. One of the big reasons we're going there is my wife's going to do the Vatican tour, the key tour, where you go first thing in the morning and you go with the guy who opens up the Vatican. So it's you and just a handful of people and you get the Vatican to yourselves. You get the Sistine Chapel without the big crowds and stuff. So we're trying that out. You know, we're going to like, she'll try that out. I'll be with the kids. But we're packing up like after this, I'll finish packing over here and we'll be out the door. But as we're going, you know, I have my team here in charge of everything for our tours that are going for the, you know, the travel company. And then for, you know, writing, I just finished up another, like I finished up my Andalusia like guidebook. And so, you know, between doing promotion for the Grand European Journeys and the, you know, the Andalusia book, wrapping that up, you know, it's been pretty busy. So I'm kind of taking a, you know, week where I'm like, okay, I get a note for myself, you know, get a kind of, you know, not for other people, but I know 6 months from now, a year from now, I'm going to be like cobbling notes, you know, from this tour together for something right. else, you know, like, you know, something I'm doing with my family. I'll generate something out of it. It's just kind of how I work, you know?
Do you think you're going to look back on all of this 40 years from now and say, how did I do all that?
Probably.
What was the big challenge putting the book together? Was there one thing that took a little bit more, I don't know if the word would be effort, but there were challenges on some aspect of it, whether it was collecting information or putting into a format that made sense or some other speed bump?
No, the writing part of it was, the research part was tough because I live full time in Morocco. And at one point when I had some research trips, this was still in the middle of the pandemic and Morocco had just shut its borders again. And so I had like two research trips that just kept getting pushed because I couldn't get down to Morocco. Like the borders were shut. There was no planes, no boats, no hot air balloons. There's no way to get out of the country. So that was tough just logistically. And then of course, the war in Ukraine starts and that kiboshed a whole nother, group of research. So we ended up having about 6 months of research trips just totally scrapped or like rejigged, So like one of the deep dives I wanted to do in Estonia, like didn't happen. So we ended up doing kind of a quicker, which I think works out pretty well, but a quicker rail trip kind of through the region, through the Baltics. And I think that worked out, but like, I'm a little bit bummed that because I should have been up there for 2 months instead of like a really quick 5 days, that whole region.
Yeah, you couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the biggest challenge. No, you can't. That's the thing with travel. You have to be flexible. Things are going to happen that's out of your control, and you just kind of have to roll with it, But those are the biggest challenges, honestly, because once it gets into the writing, once the research is done, the writing's where I just have fun, hopefully that does, show in the text, because at this point, after my like 50th restaurant review or hotel, like write up or like, how do I describe getting on a train some different way? I have a lot of fun just dialing into the language a little bit and saying, okay, what verb haven't I used?
Exactly. What adjective can I possibly add to this description of that makes sense. Before I let you go, last question, what's your favorite part of the book? What may it be a trip or a location or a person? What was your most favorite part?
Favorite part. Favorite itinerary is Paris to Bucharest and going all the way to Istanbul, actually. We put a little addition. So that's my favorite itinerary because you can do anything with that one. And I just think that's classic. It's romantic. It's fantastic. But as a writer, my favorite part, it was a big challenge, but there's in the early part of the book, there's like this 2-page spread on like the European lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I went back and forth with the editors. I was like, listen, it's a continent with a lot of different cultures. Like there's no like unifying sort of thing, but they're like, yeah, but we need to somehow address this. So I was like, okay, let's see how we can do it. So I think I managed to like distill something there that to me feels really honest. And I think just seeing it in print, like knowing the challenge that was just as a writer trying to distill a way of life from a continent that is not coherent. I think it turned out okay. I think it turned out all right.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been travel author, photographer, Lucas Peters. He's author of Grand European Journeys, 40 Unforgettable Trips by Road, Rail, Sea, and More. It's published by Moon. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. For everything about Lucas, who also owns Journey Beyond Travel, a boutique travel agency, go to lucasmpeters.com, and you can follow him on Facebook and Instagram. And Lucas, thanks for being on the show.
Modularity. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You got it. And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.